I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a couple days ago, Microsoft threatened to move jobs out of the state. And how did Democrats respond? By threatening to tax Microsoft. Plus, more video from that closed-door meeting of the teachers' union. And a local police department apologized over the arrest of a student and then apologized for apologizing. The chief of police will join us to discuss that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A reminder, we will have no show tomorrow on Thanksgiving. I hope you have a wonderful long weekend with friends and family. We did ask subscribers before the show today what they're grateful for, so we'll be sharing some of the things that you're grateful for. You know, with all the depressing news, we could use a reminder that we are grateful to be here, grateful to be alive, grateful for our health, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because I really got to start the show on a low note. And let me say, Democrats are committing economic suicide. They are driving our state toward economic ruin. I don't know what the motivation is, because it's very clear that they know what the consequences of their actions are going to be, but they're deciding to do it anyway. So figure out the motivation for that. So a couple days ago, Microsoft president Brad Smith came out in an interview with Bloomberg, and he said, essentially, that if the punitive tax climate continues in Washington state, Microsoft is going to pull jobs out of the state. Very similar to the threat that Amazon made when the city of Seattle was pushing for taxes to punish Amazon for its success. And Amazon said, we'll move jobs. We'll move jobs. City of Seattle did it anyway. They taxed high earners. And what did Amazon do? It started to move jobs. So I have every reason in the world to believe that if Brad Smith of Microsoft says if they continue to punish tech companies and successful businesses with punitive taxes, we're going to move jobs out of the state. So that was a couple days ago. That was November 21st. 5 days later, how do Washington State Democrats respond? Well, they put out this announcement that next week, socialist state representative Sean Scott, representing the will of the state Democratic Party, will be holding a press conference on the steps of the Capitol to announce what? A 5% tax on employer payroll expenses. A tax targeting companies just like Microsoft. So again, let's look at these two events together. 5 days ago, Microsoft, one of the most important employers in the state to our economic survival, says, you know what, there comes a point where we can't do it anymore. And a payroll tax expanded across the state, similar to what Seattle has, that's going to be it for us. And the state Democratic Party says, what, I'm going to call your bluff? And prepares after the Thanksgiving holiday to have a press conference and allows the socialist, the one tried and true avowed socialist, to take over their budget and tax policy. And he's going to have a press conference on the steps of the state capitol. Basically, he might as well just stand there and give a big middle finger to Microsoft. Might as well just stand there with two middle fingers in the air. And it's not just Microsoft. This would affect Amazon. It would affect other successful employers in the state. Anyone who pays employees over $125,000 a year. The same people, the socialists, the Democratic socialists, the progressives, the Democrats, who want and shame companies for not giving their workers a living wage. And now they say, if you give those workers a living wage, we're going to punish you for it. And $125,000 a year, if you're living in Seattle proper, that's essentially a living wage. It's not even a living wage if you have a family and you have kids to take care of. That's not a living wage for a family of four. But still, it's enough for Democrats and socialists to punish you over it. It's essentially every single tech job in the entire state. So put that, they're tripling down. That on top of what we know Democrats are already thinking about, a wealth tax. They're thinking about, and there was news at the end of October, that they're going to tax high earners via what really should be an unconstitutional income tax. Democrats are already thinking about targeting those making over $1 million a year, their first foray into trying to finally get their golden goose, an income tax in Washington state. So what do we have now? We know Democrats are going to propose on Monday or Tuesday a 5% tax on employer payroll expenses above $125,000. We know that they're going to propose an income tax on those making over $1 million a year. And then on top of that, and on top of that, in the city of Seattle, the new socialist mayor has already promised, for the long list of free things that she promised voters in order to get into office, she already promised high taxes.
We will need to pursue new progressive revenue in order to fund our priorities and make sure that we're delivering services to the people of Seattle. There's several progressive tax options I proposed as part of my platform, and so we're going to have city staff looking into developing those into legislation. Don't know yet exactly what the timeline's going to be on that.
But we do know exactly what those progressive tax streams would be, taxing businesses. They always come back. And this is, I said, tripling down, quadrupling down. Because we just saw the largest tax increase in state history signed into law by Governor Bob Ferguson. Much of that is what? On businesses. Big and small. B&O taxes. What are you trying to do? And one of the things, and we'll get back to it in a moment, that really bothers me about the way that they continue to frame this is their fair share. Businesses need to pitch in. Excuse my language, but what the fuck do you think they've been doing? It's wild. I watched this, I think I mentioned it on the show yesterday. I watched this great mini documentary on Boeing and the lengths that they went to build in Everett and how important it was to the founder to stay in Washington State, his home state, and to build here. And how important and proud they were of being in Washington. And it's like, we have these companies, oh my gosh, who have contributed so much to the economic success that this state has enjoyed for 30, 40 years. And you repay them by flipping them the bird, saying, you should be paying your fair share in contributing? Look across this, look at the skyline of Seattle and Bellevue. That's what they've contributed. Hundreds of thousands of good-paying jobs. An ecosystem of businesses, big and small, and you look them in the eye and you say, you need to do more, you need to pay your fair share. Let's read more into what Brad Smith of Microsoft told Bloomberg. He said, in Microsoft's home state of Washington, progressive candidates, this is from Bloomberg, won up and down the ballot this month by promising to address the affordability crisis in and around Seattle. The not-so-subtle villain in these campaigns was the tech industry, whose injection of wealth from high salaries and early career stock grants have priced out just about everyone else. Part of the solution proposed by Democratic state lawmakers and Katie Wilson, a community organizer who just won Seattle's mayoral election, is to raise taxes again on big companies and wealthy individuals. Microsoft President Brad Smith said those policies will discourage growth and undermine the competitiveness of the Pacific Northwest. If the state's tax burden, quote, becomes prohibitive, then every company will reconsider where they put jobs, he said. Brad Smith said, quote, it's more like air leaking out of a balloon than the balloon popping. Our goal is to continue to be healthy and successful and grow here. But we all need the kind of collaboration across the political community to make that happen. He said one growing office is in nearby Vancouver, BC, where Microsoft's workforce has more than doubled from its pre-pandemic level. Smith said increasing headcount there will become more attractive to Microsoft if the U.S. government goes forward with plans to charge $100,000 for the H-1B visa applications often used to bring tech talent from abroad. So mentioning Trump, but also saying decisions in Washington state could play a role as well. Vancouver would be in line for more jobs if state tax policy were to, quote, go off the rails, Smith said. you don't have to look far to find Vancouver. Now, one point of disagreement I will have with Brad Smith is it's already off the rails. It's been off the rails for a long, long time. And I appreciate, and I understand the criticism he has here of President Trump. And I think that's a valid criticism with charging more for the H-1B visa application that the tech industry relies so much on. So I'm fine with him splitting the blame, but let's not pretend as if the blame is equal. Let's not pretend as if President Trump is having more of an impact on your inability to continue to keep jobs here, as the Democrats have, who've been in charge here for 40 years, and who at every turn have vilified you, Brad Smith, your company, companies like you. And I've said this about a lot of people who I respect in the tech industry, and I respect Brad Smith, and he's spoken out more and more as of late. He's had more and more to say critical of the Democratic Party, but I think there's a lot of people in positions like his who have pussyfooted around progressives for too long. And they felt as if I play nice, if I give in here and there, if I help champion progressive causes like climate change, then they'll leave me alone. Then they'll be my friend and my ally. And they never are they? They never are they? They look at you and they spit in your face. They don't care how much community good you do. They don't care that Amazon is helping to build workforce housing. They don't care if Amazon is helping deliver food to the poor. They don't care how much community engagement you have. And Amazon, they also don't care if at your conferences you have a little board out front that allows people to wear a pin with their preferred pronouns and their gender identity. So if you're doing that to placate the progressives, they genuinely don't care. They hate you anyway. They will never like you. And at the same time, companies like Microsoft and Amazon have kept conservatives at an arm's length. You think they'd come on a show like this? I don't think so. You think they talk to the Seattle Times? Of course. Who is their ally? And who is their enemy? I feel like they've lost track of that. So eager to placate progressives. Please just, you know, be nice to us. Be nice to us. And the progressives screw them over time and time again. So I will say, as much as I will do everything in my power with my platform to try to raise awareness for this, to try to prevent it from happening, because the economic consequences are so severe, the tech companies have brought this on themselves through their efforts to placate progressives. To act as if, oh, you know, we're friendly to your causes. While they abuse you, it's like an abusive relationship. You're trying to stay in their good graces. Please don't hit me again. Please don't hit me again. Except in this case, the Democrats don't even apologize and say, I'll never do it again. I'll never do it again. They say, I'll hit you whenever I damn well please. So I'm on the side of the tech industry. I'm on the side of Microsoft. I'm on the side of Amazon. I understand what they do for our state and our communities and businesses, big and small, 100%. But there it comes a point where they need to own up to how they contributed to an environment where progressives feel like they can abuse them and use them as a punching bag. And they haven't done that yet. Going back to that Sean Scott proposal, and I don't want to understate the significance. So his press conference says, and he's either having it on Monday or Tuesday, or his press release rather, but it says two different things. It says when? Tuesday, December 2nd. When? Monday, December 1st. Maybe that's to throw us off the trail. Who knows? We'll find out when it really is, though. Rest assured. But I don't want to understate the significance of Democrats having Sean Scott do this. Think about that for a second. So you've got socialist Mamdani, who won in New York City. You've got socialist Katie Wilson, who won in Seattle. There's only one admitted avowed socialist in the entire Democratic caucus in the State House in Olympia. It's Sean Scott. Don't you find it fascinating that he's the one who's going to lead the efforts to introduce a tax on high earners? This is the Democratic Party embracing the fringe. This is the Democratic Party saying we are also the party of socialism. They can't really deny it at this point. This is his proposal that he's taking charge on. One other thing I thought was interesting, when they released this press release, they also put out this graphic with it, talking about the Well Washington Fund. And that's where it says that the House sponsor is Rep. Sean Scott, the Senate sponsor is Rep. Rebecca Saldana. But then they deleted this. So I think they accidentally posted the details of the proposal before the press conference, when they probably wanted to just talk about it at the press conference, but somebody screenshotted it quick anyway before they took it down. So they are, and this is another thing that this confirms, he says that they're doing this because of what? The impact of H.R. 1 on Washington State. They're blaming Trump. And by the way, this payroll tax that he's going to propose on the steps of the Capitol next week, they proposed it in the 2025 legislative session before H.R. 1 or before Donald Trump did anything. So now they're saying, oh, we have to do this because of Donald Trump. You guys wanted to do it last year. So let's, you know, cut through that right away. So they say that this would fund vital programs like higher ed, housing, healthcare, and SNAP, when we have more spending in our state than ever before. How can you not fund vital programs when our state budget has like doubled in the last 15 years? How do you not have money to fund vital programs? Says this would bring in $5.5 billion in new revenue per biennium through a progressive tax on 5% of employer payroll expenses above $125,000. And that's where he says our largest corporations can chip in. The Well Washington Fund simply asks major corporations to pay the same tax their employees do to support the social safety net. That makes no sense because employees, at least for now, don't pay an income tax. And this is essentially a tax on their income, but it's paid by employers, not by the employees. And then he has the audacity to say this. The Well Washington Fund enhances the economic health of our state. You moron. I mean, this is like if you take a kindergartner and you ask them to set economic policy, they'd probably give you something like this. Microsoft says we're going to leave. So again, let's go through the indicators here and what's going to happen. A few days ago, Microsoft says we'll take jobs out of the state. We'll move them up to Vancouver, BC. Sean Scott comes out a few days later and says, well, we're going to tax businesses. You ought to pay your fair share. At the same time, what's already happening? Businesses are already closing before they do any new tax policy. Before they do anything new, we're already losing businesses at a record rate. Left and right, we have a story on the show every week. We've even had people on the show who talk to us about the exact reason they're leaving, like Justin Stiefel, the CEO of Heritage Distilling.
It's pretty hard, personally, to have to, you know, make this move. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I only have one forehead. I can't keep beating it against a brick wall.
Not a pretend story. That's not even a threat. They're already doing it. They're closing their brick and mortar tasting rooms. Even our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwer Capital, advertiser on our show, when I told him about their plan to introduce an income tax on high earners, he said this.
If they pass a tax that does that, I will leave. That'll be the final straw for me. I'm out.
So the question is, do they believe? Do they believe that? Do Democrats really want to call their bluff? Microsoft is saying we're going to leave. We already know Amazon has shown a propensity when faced with the exact same tax proposal and policy in Seattle to move jobs. So if you move it across the state, it doesn't take a lot of brain power to explain what they're going to do after that. Zach Abraham is saying, I'm taking my company, Bulwer Capital, moving it out of state. That will be the last straw. Meanwhile, we already have businesses closing. Some of the businesses I mentioned earlier that have been closing are restaurants in and around the area of Amazon. Amazon is moving its workforce. That means fewer people dining out. Doesn't, again, take a rocket scientist to understand all the moving parts here and the moving pieces. And as we started the show with this week by explaining, actions have consequences. You know, while progressives have made these poor policy decisions, before every single one of them have been made official, people warned them about what would happen if they passed them, like Amazon. Hey, okay, pass a payroll tax, pass a tax on high-paying jobs. We're going to move jobs out of the city. What do they do? It wasn't an empty threat. They just moved jobs out of the city. Before rent control was passed in this past legislative session. What happened? Well, realtors came, developers came, investors came. They sat in front of Democrats in Olympia. They said, if you pass rent control, this will be the consequence.
Consumer protection policies like rent stabilization do not increase housing supply. With this bill, Washington risks sending investment capital to Oregon, California, and other neighboring states.
That's exactly what happened. They passed it anyway. They said, screw you, dude. We're going to call your bluff? Passed rent control anyway. And what happened? Latest revenue forecast that came out, $66 million in the September revenue forecast, primarily attributed to what? Lower housing permits, lower than expected housing permits. Exactly what that man with the Washington realtors told them would happen in January when they were considering passing rent control. People don't say these things, I mean, just to scare Democratic lawmakers. They tell Democratic lawmakers these things because it's what they're going to do. They're giving you an opportunity to make a different decision. But never have Democrats decided to make a different decision. Only a fool would persist. Only a fool in the face of all of this would persist with the tax policies that they claim they are going to pursue. Katie Wilson would be a fool to persist. Sean Scott, the new leader of the Democratic Party in Olympia, apparently on budget issues, would be a fool to persist. Democrats who want an income tax would be fools to persist. But I think we are a state run by fools. And the economic consequences will be severe because the people who have made these threats will follow through on them because they have every single time. It is really unreal. We are heading toward economic ruin. The businesses will leave. I'm telling you now, bookmark this episode. Does not take a genius or Nostradamus to understand this. This will be large scale and it will be devastating. And when the businesses leave and the rich people like our friend Zach leave, they're taking every single cent that they pay into the system with them. Everything. Property taxes, gas tax, sales tax, everything. And Democrats have no ability to cut a budget. So what will they do? They'll come to you, the people who can't leave, the people who can't move, the low income, the mid income, and they will tax you. And they'll come to you with their hands out and they'll stick their hands in their pocket and they'll take the money from you. They're going to get the money somehow. So when they can't take it from the rich anymore, they're going to take it from the poor. And don't say we didn't tell you so. Unreal. All right, we'll continue on next. We have more video from that WEA meeting, the meeting of the teachers union, talking about how they're going to fight back against the two Let's Go Washington initiatives. This is just a wealth of insanity from the WEA. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing, newest advertisers here on Undivided, have just been named the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for a third year in a row. And that's because no matter what they do, custom holiday lights, cleaning your gutters, exterior cleaning, cleaning your roof, or replacing your roof, you get that same great Valentine experience. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and a team that always goes the extra mile. When you call Valentine, you get honesty. And when it comes to your roof, if it can be repaired, they're not going to try to push you into a new roof. But if you do need a new roof, you can rest assured knowing that your new roof will have a lifetime warranty, and they have flexible financing options, including zero down, 0% interest. So taking care of your home has never been easier. Schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. Please tell them that you heard about them on Undivided, the company's mission at Valentine to serve and care for our neighbors with the purpose of creating a long-lasting impact and peace of mind. And that's what every homeowner wants. All right. So we shared an exclusive here on Undivided yesterday that has taken the internet by storm, as I knew it would. So a member of the Washington Education Association was on a meeting of the WEA where they were strategizing how they were going to defeat the two Let's Go Washington initiatives. Of course, one of the initiatives is to protect girls' sports. The other initiative is to restore parental rights in education, meaning schools can't keep secrets from you. So the WEA can't have either of those things. No, your kids belong to them. So the teachers union is behind the scenes strategizing. And so this member of the WEA decides that they're going to record this meeting and provide that recording to us so that we can share with you not only what the strategy is behind the scenes, but these are the talking points that the WEA is going to spend millions of dollars pushing out to you in news stories, in TV ads, in mailers. So we're going to give you a heads up as to what their lies and manipulation of the truth around these initiatives are going to be. And I will say, after we played some snippets of this video yesterday, more members of the WEA are coming forward. This was a meeting attended by like dozens of people, maybe 60 to 70 people. Multiple people on that meeting were disgusted by it. Disgusted by it. And are now behind the scenes saying that they want to help expose the Washington Education Association. So the WEA has got a little bit of a problem on its hands. Your members are revolting. And they are coming to work with your worst enemy. All right, so yesterday we talked about and played some snippets of the recording that had more to do with the girls' sports issue. Like, they're obsessed with having boys play against girls. It is such a weird obsession, and one of the clips that went viral yesterday is this woman who claims to be an expert in molecular biology who said that you couldn't even look at someone's chromosomes and DNA and determine what gender there is. And gender is a social construct and it's philosophical, like really nutty stuff. So what we want to focus on today are their arguments that they're making behind the scenes and that they are going to make publicly about the initiative to protect parental rights. So remember the background here. It's very important to understand this conversation. So there was already a Parental Bill of Rights initiative. It collected like 500,000 plus signatures, remember? It went to the legislature and the legislature adopted it because they didn't want to send it to voters. They were worried about what happened if they sent it to voters. So in 2024, they adopted it and the Parental Bill of Rights became law. But then what did they do behind the scenes? They secretly planned to come back the next session and undo it. So they adopted it to keep it off the ballot. And then the very next session, they came back this past year, 2025 session, and they said, screw you, we're undoing the Parental Bill of Rights. So what did Brian Haywood of Let's Go Washington do? He said, okay, well, screw you. We're going to do it again. And we'll see if you're willing to, not once, but twice, go against the will of voters. So they're running basically the same initiative to try to restore the Parental Bill of Rights. And one member of this Zoom meeting, so a member of the WEA, is, I think it's just funny because they're kind of stating the obvious of what Let's Go Washington is trying to do.
You know, they did this process a couple years ago and then it went to the legislature. The legislature spent an entire session digging through and doing work. And so now that this is back collecting signatures, what they're trying to do is undo all of that work that the legislature did. And what you're going to see in a second here is remove a lot. What they want to do is remove a lot of the protections that the legislature put back into it.
Yep, that's it. Yes, we are trying to undo the work the legislature did because the work the legislature did was to undo what voters wanted. So technically, you're the ones who undid everything. We're just trying to put it back in place. And she's spinning that as a, oh, we're horrible people for doing this. You undid it in the first place. Now we've got to go through all this work. And they say they're taking away the protections the legislature put in place. Remember who's protected by the legislature. They want to protect teachers and kids. They want to protect them from you, the parents. And parents are saying, that's not how this works. We own our kids. And we deserve to know what's happening with our kids at school. So a big part of the Parental Bill of Rights is making sure that parents have access to all measure of information. They have access to what their kids are being taught, and they have access to their child's records, including any sort of medical, mental health, counseling records that explain what's happening with their kid at school. And the WEA does not like that one bit.
You're seeing that all the mental health records, the protections are removed. And so those would now be available if a parent requested all of them.
Yeah.
Even though right now the law says a student that's 13 or older can self-refer for mental health support. So that's putting that up.
Yes, correct. That's what we want to do. No qualms there. We want parents to be able to access their child's mental health and medical records as it pertains to what kind of medical care or mental health care their children is getting at a public school that they pay for. So yes, you caught us on that one. Guilty as charged. They continue to talk about this mental health record issue.
The release of the mental health info, super problematic.
Super problematic.
And then there's a question on here about, is this overriding the 13-year-old self-referral rule for counseling? And we've got Therese, shout out to school nurses on here.
Yeah.
All the extra workload that is going to pile onto them. And then they're expecting, will they expect me to notify, sorry, just lost, every time I hand out a Band-Aid or an ice pack?
So you see how they make everything dramatic? They know what parents want. Like, hey, kid comes into your office and they say that they're depressed and suicidal. My child comes into your office and they say, oh, teacher Tammy over there told me that I'm actually a boy and want to talk to the school counselor about that. Want to be referred for abortion services or whatever it is. This isn't about a Band-Aid or an ice pack, okay? It's not about a Band-Aid or an ice pack, but that's what they want to make you believe. And that's what they're going to say is, under this parental bill of rights, school nurses will be overwhelmed with work because they'll have to contact parents every time they give a kid a Band-Aid. The stupidest. So a little bit of context before I go to this next one. So you'll see it up on the screen, but if you're just listening to the show today. So one of these members, super concerned that teachers will have less control over what they teach to kids. So the Parental Bill of Rights Initiative has this text in it, that parents have a right to receive written notice and the option to opt their child out of any surveys, assignments, questionnaires, role-playing activities, recordings, blah, 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 or other student engagement. So it basically says, hey, parents have a right to be able to opt their kids out. Well, this member of the teachers' union does not like that one bit.
I mean, we all have worked as locals to try to get really great academic freedom language in our CBAs, and this is definitely going to be butting heads with some of us that have worked so hard to get that in there. And that are still working hard to improve on that.
So you're butting heads with what they want to teach your kids. I've long said you should be able to opt your child out of anything you want. That's your kid. And it's a public school. If you don't want your kid learning about, God, I don't know, dinosaurs, fine. Dinosaurs will freak them out or something. To me, that should be up to you. You should have full access to understand for a variety of reasons. Hey, what's my kid going to be taught in school today? What does this semester have in store for my child? And you should be able to opt your kid out of literally anything you want. But teachers don't want that. They call it academic freedom. What about academic freedom when it comes to parents and the freedom to choose what their kid is learning at school, or at least be informed about what their kid is learning at school so they can know what's coming, make some decisions. Maybe there's a tough topic. Maybe their kids are going to learn about slavery or something. And as a parent, they want to have a conversation with their child about, you know, an issue that might be heavy. There's a million reasons you could want that. Why do you want to hide from parents? That's the bottom line. What are you teaching kids that's so bad that you want to hide it from parents? Weirdo. And then they talk about, again, they keep going back to this. Oh, this is such a burden. This is such a burden. We have some of the highest paid teachers in the whole country. You're placing all these burdens on us. And they said that it's very problematic, the time frame that the Parental Rights Initiative says that a school has to produce these records within. Right now, under law, when they changed it, 45 days. So you as a parent could request what's happening with your kids at school. And they had 45 days to give to you. By 45 days, it's already probably done. And it's probably too late. And what this says is it shortens it to up to 10 days that the school has to provide you the information you've requested. And the WEA says too little time.
A big workload concern for ESP specifically, where you see the more than 45 days highlighted. Currently, it would be 45 days to assemble, you know, a great deal of records to provide to the family. This gets crossed off and it would only be 10 days. So if you're thinking of an ESP in September working to their magic to get all the kids enrolled, that is a massive change.
Yeah, massive change, but you're the ones who changed it. Because the Parental Bill of Rights, remember, Democrats passed it too. Now they passed it for nefarious reasons, but this is what voters wanted. The legislature put it into law. They all voted for it. Up to 10 days. That's a reasonable amount of time. A parent wants to know what's happening with their kids at school. And hell, if you maintain a good relationship with a parent, you can call them and say, hey, I'm trying to get this for you. Let me get it to you as it comes in. But if you're a teacher and you're not going off script, you should have a curriculum that's set and you should be able to send it to parents in a second. Are you just making stuff up as you go along? So yeah, we do want it faster. 45 days is too long. And so they treat that as a bad thing. No, that's a very good thing for parents. You just don't like that. You don't want transparency. You don't want parents to know what's happening in the classroom. And this one just shows the motivation here, right? They don't want to lose control. That's what the teachers union is all about. The teachers union wants to be in control of your kids, of education, of all of these things. And they're worried that this will mean they lose control. So one of the things that these this member brings up is there's a little mention that's related to school choice in the Parental Bill of Rights. And this union member doesn't even like that it's being mentioned in writing.
There was something in that last one too that really struck a chord with me. It has to do with enrollment in general. There was something that said like to request enrollment for the child in a charter school if something were to happen. That's really alarming to me, especially with our numbers, the way that we have them. And didn't we just beat a charter initiative to begin with? Like, I feel like they're inserting that back into it too.
So just to be clear, the Parental Bill of Rights doesn't expand any sort of school choice issues. It just talks about, you know, if there's a problem that a kid has at school, you know, parents have a right to sort of request that their child be moved at a certain time. But he doesn't even like the fact that a charter school is even mentioned in this law at all, because he says, did you hear what he said? Can you play it one more time, Nicole? Because listen really closely to what he says.
There was something in that last one too that really struck a chord with me. It has to do with enrollment in general. There was something that said like to request enrollment for the child in a charter school if something were to happen. That's really alarming to me, especially with our numbers.
That's really alarming to me, especially with our numbers. Enrollment's down quite a bit. They know that parents aren't happy with the quality of the education or the secrets that are being kept from them. And they're worried because if numbers continue to go down, then that's not good for teachers. It's not good for the teachers union. It's not good for their jobs. So they're trying to artificially cut out anything that might even give parents an idea that they could send their child somewhere else. Just wild stuff. So we're going to continue to dig through this audio again. You know, when one brave person steps forward, we always see more brave people follow. And so we had one member of the WEA originally who was really upset with what happened on this meeting. Now we have more who are on this meeting who are like, you know what? I want to speak up too. I want to be part of trying to expose what's happening within the teachers union. So to the WEA, there is nowhere you can hide. There is nothing that you can say that's private because we're going to get our hands on it, okay? And for more teachers, come forward, work with us. And you know what? Even if the only step you want to take is leaving the union, I think that's a very good step. I think that's putting kids first. I think it is putting kids first at this point and showing respect for parents to leave the Washington Education Association. All right, coming up next, moving right along, there is a bizarre story out of Port Orchard that has to do with the arrest of a Kitsap high school student, where the police department apologized for the way the arrest was made and now is apologizing for the apology. It's all very strange. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, and we get a ton of great stories from members of the Undivided family that are now members of the First Mark family. Christine's is one of the best. She says that First Mark ended up saving her $10,000 a year on her insurance, which is amazing because she had a really complicated insurance policy, two businesses, house, was adding a third car to their policy, big family, and then they found out their carrier was dissolving. So she's like, wow, we are screwed. And then she remembered First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com. Brandy's been telling me about it. So they called First Mark. First Mark's like, we got you, girl. Well, they probably didn't say that. Probably a little more professional. But they went out, shopped their market of carriers, came back with their recommendations and said, great news, we can get you great insurance. We can save you $10,000 over what you were paying before. So probably a good thing her carrier dissolved, honestly. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, we have put police departments in quite the predicament. Democrats made policing political. Democrats vilified police in 2020. Still going on to a great extent in a state like ours. And so I think police are just always worried about what they do and how it's going to be perceived by the public versus whether they just do what needs to be done and they just let members of the public whine about it if they choose to do it. So such is the case for an incident happening right now in Port Orchard at South Kitsap High School. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So this story is making the rounds on social media. We've been working to confirm aspects of it. So I know you guys have been saying, are you going to talk about this? Are you going to talk about this? We've confirmed sort of everything that was going on here. So there was an incident on November 20th at South Kitsap High School. This is what the Port Orchard Police Department said about it at the time. It involved three students, and it's a pretty significant crime. So it said, on November 20th, officers were dispatched to South Kitsap High School for the report of a student who'd been hit in the head with a pole. Officers arrived, contacted a 15-year-old female who was in the nurse's office. The student had a head injury and was being treated by school staff. South Kitsap Fire and Rescue was dispatched to provide medical aid. She would eventually be transported by aid to a local hospital for additional treatment. Officers contacted an additional victim, a 15-year-old male, who had been the original caller to 911. The male had also been hit in the head, sustaining an injury. He received medical aid. He was taken by private vehicle to a local hospital for additional treatment. So two 15-year-olds hospitalized, okay? What happened? Officers identified a suspect and developed probable cause to arrest a 16-year-old male, another student, for reckless endangerment and assault in the third degree. The suspect was contacted in a classroom and arrested. He was booked into the Kitsap Juvenile Detention Center. Additional charges may be filed. It said the investigation determined that the suspect had dropped a metal pole from a landing above where the two victims were seated, and it struck both of them. So this 16-year-old student dropped this gigantic, heavy metal pole for God knows why off a landing, and two kids were seated below and were hit with it. And the injuries to one of them in particular was incredibly severe. In fact, there's a GoFundMe up right now for her. It says, support Hannah's recovery from traumatic injury. She's a sophomore. She is a cadet with ROTC. Says she has dreams of enlisting in the Navy. She said she was at school that day, was the victim of a violent act. Says they've spent 8 hours in the trauma unit at the hospital and literally were worried that she was going to die. She received several stitches in the back of her head and was diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury. She was also briefly knocked unconscious after this other student threw a pole off an elevated area onto her where she was sitting. So she has a traumatic brain injury. So that's how significant this totally... there was nothing unprovoked attack was. In the hospital, ICU, traumatic brain injury, stitches to her head. Okay? So that happens. That's all unfolding. The principal at South Kitsap High School sends this email out to parents. It says, earlier today, there was an incident. A student was engaged in unsafe behavior. Okay, that to say it lightly. Says that police were called. A decision was made to enter the classroom and remove the student who committed the unsafe behavior from campus. We have a longstanding partnership with Port Orchard Police, and we'd like to share Chief Matt Brown's response to the incident. So this is what was sent from the school, quote from the chief of police, as like this just happened, right? This girl is still in the ICU at the time with a traumatic brain injury. The police chief says, this was an error in judgment, and officers should have made their arrest out of the view of other students. It was not our intent to cause disruption. The officers have been counseled, and we will ensure our department is more cognizant of sensitive situations in our schools. We value our relationship with the South Kitsap School District and intend to be better partners moving forward. Understand this for a second. This kid throws a giant metal pole off a balcony, injures two students, sends one of them to the hospital with a traumatic brain injury. And the police department's apologizing for arresting the student in front of other kids. So I'm actually pleasantly surprised that parents and students were like, what? There were parents and students all over social media contacting us saying, why is the police department apologizing for how this kid was arrested for doing something that could have killed two fellow students? Like, what in the fresh hell is going on here? And students were upset with how the school handled it as well. And the school sent out that statement that really seemed to minimize unsafe behavior. Oh, it's just unsafe behavior. No big deal. So actually, some of the students yesterday walked out of class.
Train your staff! Train your staff!
Saying, train your staff!
Train your staff! Train your staff! Train your staff! Train your staff! Train your staff!
Kids walk out for all sorts of dumb stuff. I think it's a good reason to walk out. So they go out, they protest this. So this is an example, I think, of woke gone awry. It's like the kid almost killed two students. Yeah, he had to go in and arrest him. Sorry if that was traumatizing, right? And I think the chief of police understood that their original statement wasn't great, and that it gave the impression that they were downplaying the seriousness of what this child did, allegedly, and what they did to fellow students. So they had released this follow-up incident report where he apologized for the apology. God, to be a police chief these days, you can't get anything right. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Said, I want to address my messaging on that morning. I could have done better, and for that, I apologize. I want to take a moment to express my regret for not wholly communicating my position. I fully support the officer's decision to make the arrest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But instead of reading his apology for the apology, actually, the chief of police for Port Orchard, Matt Brown, was nice enough when we called to inquire WTF to agree to join us on the show today to explain. Chief, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you know why this 16-year-old allegedly did this? Was it like for some social media video or something?
We don't know the intent.
Okay.
As you know, legislation makes it difficult for us to talk to individuals under 18. So we do not know the intent.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, how serious would you characterize the injuries of the other students?
I would say they were significant.
Okay. So what are we talking about here? Misdemeanor, felony?
The suspect was booked for a felony.
Gotcha.
Felony assault.
So this is, you know, there is some anger in the community about how this is handled, I think, by the school and the police department. I think chief among those, and one of the things that took me off guard, is the apology for the way in which this student was arrested. So what was your concern about the optics of how the student was arrested?
So, I mean, first of all, the big lesson for me is, you know, my communication needs to be just a little bit more strategic, but there are nuances to how we conduct law enforcement in the schools. I want to say out the gate, the officers did nothing wrong. Okay. They did an excellent investigation. We were on scene within 3 minutes of receiving the call, and we had the suspect in custody within 12 minutes of arrival. So I don't have any problems with their actions. The issue is, you know, it's best practice to not arrest students in classroom, and that has nothing to do with whether they are going to be embarrassed, whether they're not going to be held accountable. You know, we partner with the schools. We have similar goals, but different missions, and theirs is to ensure that they have a safe and positive learning environment. So the goal is generally to not arrest students in the classroom because it's disruptive. That has nothing to do with how the suspect feels or how the process is going to continue with that arrest and investigation.
Got you. So it wasn't meant to be like, we're sorry this student was embarrassed. It was more like, we're sorry we had to do this in front of other students?
I could have written it better. Okay. I think when you read the statement that was published yesterday, if we had taken a tactical pause, I think that message could have been delivered better and there wouldn't have been any issue. That's why I take, you know, in my statement, I say, hey, look, I own this. This is on me. Mm-hmm. The goal is, as you know, everyone in our community has a different idea of how things should be done in the schools. And we try to our best to make sure that we address things where we have the most support and we do it the most appropriately.
Yeah.
And so there are individuals that a number of individuals in the community that don't want cops in schools at all. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the nuance comes in, where we really collaborate with the school district. We have a great relationship with the school district.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because Kitsap's a little different than Seattle politics. But do you guys have school resource officers?
The Kitsap County Sheriff's Office does. Bremerton does not. I believe Poulsbow, and I'm not sure about Bainbridge Island, do. We had a school resource officer for a number of years. When COVID hit, obviously there wasn't any in-person school, so we didn't have an SRO. They went back to hybrid. And in 21, our staffing level didn't allow us to do so. And, you know, as one of the fastest growing communities in Washington State, we're really trying to play catch up with our staffing level, not only to get back to what we had, but to get more. Our calls for service have gone up about 40% since I got here in 2019. And so we want to have a school resource officer. The school district wants us to have a school resource officer. It's more about getting to the level where we have the resources to do so.
Gotcha. And so just so I understand, it sounds like from your description, officers went into a classroom to arrest the student and take him out. Like, are we talking handcuffs in a classroom or what?
Yes. Again, minimally disruptive, but we wanted to speak to the community to say, hey, look, this isn't normal. We try to do it outside, but we also don't explicitly say we're not going to go in there and do that. I mean, the classic answer in law enforcement is, well, it depends.
Right.
If it's appropriate to do so out of the classroom, we will. Or, you know, we'll have security or another staff member walk in, escort the student out. But there may be times when it's absolutely appropriate for us to say, nah, we appreciate what you want, but this is a better tactical decision. And then we will go in and get them.
Yeah, well, I think that's important to say because, as you know, people like to make promises, but you can't make a promise. You don't know what situation you might be confronted with in a school. And to say, we'll never arrest a kid inside a classroom, I think would be a promise that you wouldn't be able to keep necessarily. So what would your message be to students, these students who were injured and their families who saw your initial statement and were very frustrated by it?
Well, I mean, again, I apologize. We can always do better. My agency has a very strong debrief culture. And part of that is anytime we have an incident, whether it be small or large, we sit down and we say, hey, what can we do better? And that goes up and down the chain. We talk a lot about leading up, and I expect my staff and the community when you know, I step wrong and trip, like I expect them to say, hey, can you do better next time? Because that's how we continue being professional and we continue moving forward. So obviously this is incredibly tragic for the two students that were injured. And our hearts go out for them. Again, we are here for public service and being here for our community. And the fact that, you know, I put out a statement that caused a little bit of a lot of confusion and misunderstanding instead of being able to have that more succinct is disappointing. But I own that and we'll be better.
Hey,
because again, we don't want the community. I mean, you already have a tragic incident and you don't want to compound the problem with misinformation or misunderstanding.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that introspection, and I think parents will too. And that's really all we can ask for, right? Is what do we do wrong? What do we do different? And I think there's some compounded concern here about the disciplinary environment within the school, which really isn't your area. I mean, they have to deal with their discipline. If there's a criminal act, you guys have to deal with it. Sounds like you know kind of what went wrong here. And so I think there's a different disciplinary issue that the school needs to address, and hopefully they'll come on with us and do that. All right, Chief. Well, I got no problems with that. Sounds like you guys figured out what you did wrong, move forward from there, but we appreciate you coming on to talk to us about it.
Of course. Thank you very much for letting me have a few moments, and you have a wonderful holiday.
There you go. All right. Well, just let police do their jobs, okay? Everybody stop making such a big deal out of it. And then, you know, police departments, you don't feel like you need to apologize for everyone, tiptoe around everything. And there are also some significant issues in that school district with parents feeling like appropriate discipline isn't being handed out to students. Now, to me, I don't know why you would grab a big giant metal pole and throw it off a balcony. I think that's, he mentioned there, that the law limits their ability to interview juvenile suspects. And so they don't really know why he did it. Did he do it for a stupid social media video? Did he do it because he's dangerous? I don't know. But parents have a lot of questions and the school district needs to answer them. Absolutely. But that is the police department side of things. So, all right, coming up next, we have some breaking news out of Washington, D.C. we're going to get to. But first, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Carlos did, gave him 5 stars, said selling property is stressful, especially in a volatile market. But we never doubted our decision to sell with Wes. He understands our needs, knew the market, had a recipe for success. He said they had an out-of-state move, needed repairs on their home they were trying to sell, had to rely completely on someone that they trusted. So they chose Wes, and they said that they kept him constantly informed, made sure nothing was missed. From repairs to staging, showings, negotiations, and closing, it was all done with care and precision. We sold our house quickly and for top dollar. If you want a dedicated, experienced team that goes above and beyond, sell with Wes. That's Carlos's recommendation, and it's our recommendation too. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Start by using their home value calculator right there on the website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, a little bit of an update. So there's something happening outside the White House. There were two individuals shot near the White House, not in the White House, near the White House, and they were National Guard troops from West Virginia. So two West Virginia National Guard members have died now. Oh my gosh, this is horrible. In the shooting near the White House, according to the state's governor, a suspect now in custody was also shot and has injuries that are not believed to be life-threatening. President Trump sent out this post on Truth Social. I believe it came before the latest update, so it might have been a little bit outdated. He said the animal that shot the two National Guardsmen, because at the time they were critically wounded, is also severely wounded, but regardless will pay a very steep price. God bless our great National Guard and all of our military and law enforcement. These are truly people I, as President of the United States, and everyone associated with the Office of Presidency, appreciate. We are with you. So again, two West Virginia National Guard members have both died after being shot near the White House in Washington, D.C. The suspect is in custody. They were shot and have injuries. The President of the United States says that suspect will pay a very steep price. And we know, again, not sure the circumstances of it, but we know that there's been a significant National Guard presence in Washington, D.C. at the behest of the President and the White House to try to keep the area safe. In fact, I was in Washington, D.C. twice this fall. The second time I was there, I had some free time, and there were National Guard soldiers who were out patrolling the streets. And I commented at the time that it really felt safe there. It felt like the presence of those guardsmen was welcome by people. I was in an area that with heavy dining and was talking to friends who live in D.C., and they said they just absolutely appreciated seeing the National Guard out at all hours of the day. They really felt like the city had gotten safer. So we don't know. Is this a random act? Is it someone who did it for political reasons because they're not happy with the presence of the National Guard? Were they shot trying to stop someone from doing something? So we will wait, get more information, but certainly our heart goes out to the people of West Virginia and the family of these two National Guard members who were killed in a shooting just a little bit ago outside or near the White House. So really heartbreaking stuff. All right. We don't have a show tomorrow, as you know. And so we asked my sister, will you join us a day early? There's a lot happening in Florida. We wanted to keep it to good positive stuff. Since it's Thanksgiving and we're all talking about things we're grateful for, well, there's some great stories we're grateful for out of Florida.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, we asked subscribers what they're thankful for. Name one thing you're thankful for. Go.
Life.
I thought you were going to say the fact that you just officially bought a house.
Oh, yeah. I'm also, that's part of life, but I am thankful for that. I was going to be more thankful when I have my keys in my hand, but we'll talk about that when we get there, I guess.
Very exciting. Very exciting. All right. We figured we'd do some feel-good stories today. So in Florida, they have an issue with empty classrooms, which is hilarious, but it's because they give parents other options. So parents are choosing things other than public school. But what they're saying is with the charter schools, that particularly the ones that serve lower performing school districts, you know, there's this issue where it's like, oh, we've got to spend all this money building a place for the charter school. They're like, don't do that. Just put the charter schools in the regular schools and let them use the classroom space.
Yeah. And honestly, the argument makes sense because even though the classrooms are empty, taxpayers are still footing the bill for cleaning those areas, maintaining them. There's still transportation routes for the kids that are in school. There's still cafeterias. The staffing needs to be pretty much still at full capacity, even though there's empty spaces. So it absolutely makes sense to just utilize that readily available space so that when you have kids waiting to get into charter schools, they don't have to wait for a building to get built. It's already available.
Yeah, they said that they have, the state has some schools that were built for 800 students that now only have a few hundred left in those schools. And I'm sure there's a different, you know, little bit of a decline in people having children. So that's part of it. And really nationwide, that's been an issue. But also you have so many other options for kids in Florida, unlike Washington State. Yeah, so they have schools built for 800 that only serve a few hundred, and entire wings that are sitting unused. Yet, as you point out, they still have to pay to heat and cool them and all these other issues. So this is just so smart, and it makes the reality of charter schools even easier. So it's just a no-brainer. Saves taxpayers money.
It definitely seems like a no-brainer. And it just goes along with the narrative that Florida's always had about school choice and also just putting education first. And I think it's a really great, quick solution to a problem that they have. So,
you know what else is a great idea? And I've said that it is property taxes in general are crazy to me. But I know Ron DeSantis wants to just do away with property taxes. In lieu of that maybe pipe dream, a Republican state lawmaker in Florida has introduced House Joint Resolution 205, and this would say no property taxes for people over 65?
Yeah, so this is kind of the introduction into the process of how can we eliminate property taxes as a whole. You have to kind of start somewhere. So they are going to start with people who have been in the workforce for a very long time and are probably enjoying their retirement. So people over the age of 65 who already benefit from homestead exemptions, they would not have to pay a big chunk of their property tax bill. They would still be required to pay the part of the bill that includes public schooling.
Gotcha.
But which is actually a very significant amount of property taxes, but it provides a big relief for people who are on fixed incomes and own their homes and are just trying to enjoy their sunset years in peace without having to like fork up all their hard-earned money to pay additional property taxes. And this bill would also hold local officials accountable for basically not allowing them to reduce their budget for fire departments and police departments because of this loss, because technically the people over 65 would still be paying that portion of the bill. So it would kind of put a little bit of a check and balance on local officials for spending that money appropriately.
So they would basically say, oh, you can't come out and just say, oh, well, we got to cut all these services. Sorry, you'd have to keep the core functions funded. And if you really have to cut and you can't budget, you better find cuts somewhere else, essentially.
Yeah, and I think our CFO of Florida has proven time and time again, city after city, that our local budgets are being a little bit blown out of proportion for no reason. So I think they can find some room for the 65 and older crowd to take a break from the taxes.
Sure. And it always breaks my heart whenever I hear stories of people who've been in their homes, and especially in Florida, which is really a retirement state, who've been in their homes, and then all of a sudden their property tax bill is more than, you know, what their mortgage was when they first got into their home, and then they just can't afford to live there. And property taxes should never push someone out of the home that they've lived in for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. It's just ridiculous. So I like this idea. I think it's a good place to start. All right. Feel good Thanksgiving story. DeSantis saves the puppies. What is this press conference about?
So this press conference is coming off the heels of a press conference he does at this local dog rescue every year. He loves going to the big dog ranch.
Can we just say, this is Nicole and I's dream. We want, and Mike and I have some property that we want to name the Lucky Dog Ranch, and I want to just rescue old dogs and let them live out their glory days. This is my dream. So go ahead.
Yeah. And also, this facility is beautiful. If you go online and look, it is like heaven on earth for dogs who are looking for a home. But so he goes there every year to just talk about initiatives that he wants to push through the legislative session next year. So this year, they're going to be focusing on holding puppy mills and dog breeders accountable. So basically trying to shut down puppy mills altogether, and then also holding dog breeders to a higher standard. He wants to require, you know, pet stores to put space forward for dogs that need rescuing first before selling dogs from puppy mills, from breeders. And then also another interesting thing I saw in here was this would also be asking to increase penalties for people who commit crimes against dogs in front of minor children.
Yeah, 100%, because that's traumatizing. You're already abusing a dog, which I think death penalty, yeah. But in front of kids. He said, do we have a clip from his press conference? I love that he said this. So true.
Now, on the mistreatment, you know, we've proposed very strong penalties because I just think it's important. I think we want to deter. And I'll tell you, I've not seen anybody complain when somebody that's cruel to the dogs gets the book thrown at them. I mean, I just, you know, sometimes there's certain crimes, you know, in life where some people, well, that may be too harsh for this. I've never heard that with this because I just think it's totally inappropriate and unacceptable to be doing it.
Yeah, non-controversial. And this comes after he's, you know, been talking about, you know, going after people who abuse animals for a long time. He signed, you came on, you talked about Trooper's Law and Dexter's Law. Dexter's Law was passed after a dog was brutally killed just days after it was adopted. And then Trooper, who has a new family, is doing great now, but that's that dog that was like tied to a fence during the hurricane and flooding.
Yeah, I actually have a follow-up on Trooper's Law, that whole story.
Oh, don't tell me he's dead or something. I don't need that.
The criminal case against the guy that let the dog go has been taking place this year. And it was recently kind of found out that he, although he abandoned his dog in the wake of a storm and it was found attached to a fence, its collar got caught to that fence. He was not tied to that fence. So the owner is still facing charges for abandoning a dog during a storm, but he is not being charged with tying that dog to the fence as it was originally reported.
Gotcha. That is a difference for sure, because you're tying the dog there for certain death, but it's still messed up to just say, hey, survive the storm on your own while I flee. So screw that guy. death penalty case. All right, Miranda, happy Thanksgiving. We appreciate it. We'll see you next week.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
You know, alligators celebrate Thanksgiving too. All right, I got to clear something up. And I blame Ari Hoffman, who apparently does a satire post on his social media every day. Ari, you got to make it more obvious. It wasn't obvious that this was satire. So somebody in our comments, I think on Monday's show, we were talking about Katie Wilson. They said, oh, Katie Wilson has said that she's going to decline her security detail and will decline to be driven around by her security detail and will instead opt for public transportation. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I feel like I would have heard that, right? Well, we found the source of that little lie. It was our friend Ari Hoffman, who does these satire posts. He had a picture of Katie Wilson. It said, police abolitionist Mayor-elect Katie Wilson pledges to give up her armed Seattle police protection, police-provided taxpayer-funded SUV, and driver, saying, I need to be true to my values. Well, apparently that was just satire. It says, you know, the fake Ari Hoffman up top. So, Ari, you got to make it more obvious satire.
You know,
because
you're actually
confusing people.
He actually did a poll, I think, on are these obvious enough
satire. Did people say no?
And they said no. So he added that, I think, the faux at the
Ari Hoffman.
Yeah.
Yes.
But still not obvious enough.
Still not obvious enough. I didn't look at that. I read the thing. So anyway, I'm glad. I was like, I'm so confused. I feel like I would have heard that. So if you thought that, it was satire. So there you have it. And I don't think she should give up her police detail. I mean, it's hypocritical, but the mayor of Seattle needs to be protected. And that's just the reality of the situation. So whether I support the mayor or don't, she deserves to be protected, as we all do. And that's why you shouldn't abolish the police, dum-dum. All right, we'll get to comments and what you're grateful for coming up next. First, I am grateful for our wonderful friends at the Rental Housing Association, who have been fantastic sponsors of our show now for going on almost a year. RHAWA.org. If you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, they don't really deal with the big guys, but small to mid, become a member of RHA today. It's about $260 a year, and it serves a lot of purposes. They'll help you navigate this complex world we're in of rules, regulations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they're down in Olympia every year helping look out for your interests. So you really do have an advocate in the RHA down in Olympia. So RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. All right, let's get to some comments before I get to what you're grateful for on this Thanksgiving Eve. Although I just saw Riley Gaines tweeted out that mashed potatoes are horrible. And now I'm not even, I don't even like her. Now she's dead to me.
She's lost you.
Oh my God. Mashed potatoes are like one of my favorite, besides taco salads, mashed potatoes, close second.
I know, it's my mom's too. Oh,
love them.
I can't go any family meal without mashed potatoes. And there has to be twice as many leftovers as we actually ate at the dinner.
Right, correct. But like if I'm going, I'm not going to your house for Thanksgiving or Christmas without mashed potatoes. I'm just not doing it.
It's a staple.
And I know I'm in my skinny girl era, but I'm eating those mashed potatoes.
It's allowed.
Absolutely. All right, some comments from the stream on Microsoft saying it will move jobs. We got a lot of super chats today. So maybe that's a, you guys always give us a lot of super chats around the holidays. Yeah. That's very nice to you. I will put it toward my mashed potato budget. Microsoft saying it'll move jobs. Bill Biz, I really believe that Seattle socialists need to realize the worst in order to prompt a change. Loss of jobs and corporate tax base are just the start. But like, do they assign blame to the right places? I'm not so sure. They'll just say, oh, greedy companies moved away. Old Sub Sailor, they're pushing out anyone that would push back against their socialist agenda. They can control and bully whoever remains. Little Miss J, those who are Democrats, not socialists, don't understand that this is the slow crawl into communism. Almost sounds similar to you will own nothing and be happy. Think of it this way. They are killing off capitalism directly, and so many don't see the dark path that it is leading down. And I would say to reasonable Democrats, it's now or never. It is now or never in so many areas. Who's calling me in the middle of the show? You don't know that I'm on the air. I'm going to shame her. Ashley Stubbs.
Oh, no.
Yes, of Congressman Newhouse's staff. You know that I'm on the air. Why are you calling me? She's going to be so mad. I love Ashley. But, you know, yeah, I thought you were a big fan of the show. Apparently not, if you're calling me live. What was I even talking about? I don't know.
Reasonable Democrats. Get on board.
Now or never.
This is ridiculous.
Like even on the girls' sports issue, it is really now or never. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand what you're so scared of. What, socialists? There's just a handful of the rule tried and true socialists. You outnumber them. But you just are so meek and quiet. It's ridiculous. All right. Patrick, Brad Smith and all the Ashley's going to get a kick out of that one. Patrick, Brad Smith and all the executives at Microsoft have championed these progressive policies and politicians for years. They created their own monster. Oh, they've supported and like Democrat initiatives, opposed Republican initiatives. So again, I understand. And hopefully they're coming around. I'll always allow room for change. Nancy, I'd hate to do it, but I might have to call Wes Jones. Yeah, if you end up moving, you might have to call Wes Jones.
Like you said, maybe that's their idea for ideas for getting the cost of living down is just to scare everybody, all the business off.
Right. 100%. I don't know. But does that reduce cost of living? I mean, I guess.
I mean,
you
house
have everything
prices
empty,
will go
right?
down.
All right. WEA lying about the initiatives. Papa Woody, the school nurse in the 70s and 80s, could only give aspirin and a document from the school to tell parents counselors were there for education purposes, not mental health. They aren't psychologists. Some of them might be. I don't know. But yeah, back in the day, I wasn't seeing my, you might talk to your school counselor about, you know, things happening or whatever in your life, but like
you could, but they don't have to be they don't have to have a doctorate to do that.
Right.
I'm pretty sure the qualifications for that role are not what they should be if you're given the responsibilities we're allowing them to have at this point.
Yeah. And we also weren't going to our counselors talking about changing genders when we were kids. So there's a lot more going on now. All right. On the controversy of this student being arrested in a classroom, Prince L.E. says, how about no? You better arrest him in front of everybody. He needs to be the example. Perp walk his
Shame.
Ass. 100%. Like, yeah, you almost killed two people. Sorry. Yeah. You're going to be put in handcuffs in front of other kids so they know that there's consequences for your actions. I agree, Prince.
I mean,
I agree.
That absolutely should be the policy. And if they were on their way to the bathroom, go back in the classroom and let's do it in front of everybody and let them know.
Papa says that's what you get when you try to be politically correct instead of just being correct. And I think the police chief learned his lesson there. So I appreciated him being,
nice
kind of, he was a nice guy. Yeah. I was ready to just sort of go hard on him. Then he's like, yeah, we screwed up, figured it out. I'm like, okay. All right. Well, that's all I really need. Mighty Mouse. So are they saying that the teenagers get traumatized by the rule of law? Yeah. Cause that's what we've instilled in them. Cops are bad. No consequences for your actions. Just wild.
And these poor cops. Goodness gracious.
I know. All right. Three random super chats. Chuck Heller, $10 for Miranda's housewarming fund. Son Miller, $10 for our smashed potato fund. No. Take it back. Smashed potatoes are not the same as mashed potatoes. Smashed potatoes are often very dry. I'm not interested in them. Although I did go to dinner at a friend's house and they made smashed potatoes in a cast iron skillet. And there must have been a ton of butter or something because those were pretty delicious. But whenever I get smashed potatoes at a restaurant, I'm thoroughly disappointed. Matthew Cook, $20 super chat. I'm grateful for Undivided and all that you do. Happy Thanksgiving to Brandy Nicole, Miranda Darrell, and our great Undivided community. Aww. Cheers. Oh, so agree. Speaking of that, I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X a simple question today. Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah.
What are you grateful for? She has to go away to do this. And what are you grateful for, Nicole? What are you grateful for?
Well, of course, I'm grateful for my family, my friends. You call under friends oh, okay. and job. And I'm grateful for all my travel experiences this year. I went to some really cool places, yeah. new places.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I love it.
I mean, that, you know, roof over my head, all the things. So
yeah, I'm really grateful for my sister's health this year. I've been thinking a lot about it because, you know, we almost lost her not long ago. So I'm grateful she's doing so much better from a health perspective because, yeah. you know, we need her. I'm grateful she's going to come work for us in the new year. Grateful for my sweet husband. He's only a pain in the ass 50% of the time. And I appreciate that. He could be a pain in the ass 100% of the time. 50% of the time is great. No, he's sweet. He's great.
50% of the time is probably just when he's handling your pain in the ass.
That's true. And I'm grateful that for our dogs and that Mackenzie's still with us. I know. She's 15 and she again.
Really, the health of all of our, yes. our people and our pets
yes.
is key.
All right. I'm going to read a couple of yours from Patreon, Locals, and X. Terry Lee on Locals says, I'm grateful for a great husband and family, good friends, decent health, retirement with both a pension and Social Security, medical through my husband's job, a nice home, and my horse. And by the way, although I'm not 65, I am not geriatric. I told Nicole the other day, I said, I should stop using the phrase geriatric.
To Brandy, anyone above the age of 45 is geriatric. First of all, that's I mean, not really true. 42 because
you're
she
geriatric.
Pretty much,
because
she considers me geriatric.
Nicole still puts two spaces after every sentence. I'm like, and then her and Miranda put www dot before things. And I'm like, you do realize you don't have to do that, right? So I'll stop just throwing around the phrase geriatric. It's more so to make fun of the gray hairs who go out and protest with the leftist causes. Sandy Fleck says, I'm grateful for my sobriety. Everything else that's good follows it. Love that for you. Sarah H., I'm grateful for my family, especially my amazing son. And I'm so grateful for you and the Undivided team, Brandy. You and your team have helped me stay sane through the crazy here in Washington. Thank you, friend. Elise Russell, I'm grateful for my doctor who literally saved my life, my health, and the fact that I was able to be here and celebrate my daughter's beautiful wedding with my family. Oh, we love that for you, Elise. A couple more. Anna says, I'm grateful for my husband. He works his butt off to provide for our family and ensures I can stay home to care for the kids. It hasn't been easy. We've faced some challenges over the past couple years, but he keeps me grounded and level-headed through the storms. Next year, we'll celebrate our 10-year anniversary of being together. I love that. I love that. Being married is a blessing. And we'll end here with American. I am thankful. I think this is on X. I'm thankful for my family and their unconditional love. I'm also proud of them for the support they have. For Constitution and the rule of law. Love that. I couldn't ask more from my 4 sons, 4 daughters-in-law, and 7 grandsons. Love that. So happy Thanksgiving. I hope you all just have a wonderful time with family and friends. We're going to get to a great spicy closing sanity check. We're too much soft shit today. Get to something fun and spicy. First, with talk of an AI bubble, are you concerned about the risk your retirement portfolio is exposed to? If the answer is yes, take some time to reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital and learn how to best protect your investments. The impact AI is having on the market is something he can discuss with you, do a preview for 2026, talk about how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios. Plus, Zach will give you a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I cannot get enough of this Tish woman, the black lesbian Gold's Gym lady who was mad about a dude being in the locker room, got lost her membership for it, and now she's going to all these events with all the politicians holding them accountable. I also am so happy we have yet another Democrat running for governor in California that we can talk about on the show, because Katie Porter, you know, she had her moment, and I feel like been downhill for her. So Eric Swalwell, of course, sensed the vulnerability and jumped in to be a hero for the Democratic Party to run for governor. Well, he got a little bit of the Tish treatment.
You against men in women's locker rooms and sports? That's all you need to answer.
I'm telling you, I don't want men harassing you in women's locker rooms.
I know.
That should not happen.
It's happening all around America. There are 45 women and there are 45 men in the women's prisons right now, raping them, picking them out like chicken. The trans men are not women, and they're raping women. So I don't care if you're on the Democrat side, the Republican side. We need to be on the women's side, people. It's happening to our girls. It's happening to our women. The who?
The trans kids. Will you protect
them? There are no trans kids. There are just children. Stop transforming children. No one can make a decision that young. When I was 12, I would have transformed. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's abuse. Don't trans children. It's abuse.
Enough. You know what I'm grateful for this Thanksgiving? Tish. Tish the lesbian. The lesbians are good. I just don't know her last name, so I call her Tish the lesbian. She's my favorite, and she's going to save America. It's wonderful. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. We will not be here tomorrow. I'm going to be trying my hand at baking bread for the first time with my friend Nancy's recipe.
Okay.
She's made it at her house. I'm like, God, that's good. And I've never baked, but I got that stand mixer at the canine charity we were at in Snohomish County.
KitchenAid.
I want a KitchenAid, and so I'm going to use it. I'm going to bake some bread. You know, I don't know how it's going to turn out. Probably not well. But if I just follow the directions, measure everything.
Photos.
I'll send you photos if it turns out well.
Okay.
If it doesn't, it never happened.
I really want photos.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's it. Really grateful for you guys. Thank you so much for allowing us to do what we love doing. We couldn't do it without our paid subscribers. So a special thank you to you in this season of gratitude. We will see subscribers on Sunday. We still have a Sunday show. Mm-hmm. It's a spicy one this week. And then we'll see the rest of you back here on Monday at noon. Okay, bye.